That poor girl is like, could my job be done, please? I'm horrible at this. Can't do this anymore. I have lied through my teeth for 2 years straight. I only have a month left. I just want to, she needs a nap. She's like, I can't do this
she
anymore.
She needs a nap.
She does. We need a nap from KJP.
I think that our country is right now in the most dangerous position it's ever been.
Confident that there will be a peaceful transfer of power in January 2025.
Trump wins. No, I'm not coming.
Take a look at what happened.
You're considered the most liberal United States senator.
Somebody said that. Dana, I think the most important and most significant aspect of my policy perspective and decisions is my values have not changed.
4 months from now, we will have an incredible victory, and we will begin the four greatest years in the history of our country.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to Campaign Games, the game of survival for both the candidates and the voters. I'm Miss Sadie, and I'm here with my friend Rachel. Say good morning, Rachel.
Good morning, Rachel.
And we're in for another episode to discuss the pardoning that was never going to happen, ever, ever, ever.
Right, absolutely not. It was not going to happen.
Yeah, I'm in shock. Shock, yeah. I tell you.
Yeah, look at me. Look at me being so shocked right now.
But before we get into the episode, I want to make a quick housekeeping announcement at the start of the episode. So we've got a lot of questions about what's going to happen with Campaign Games now that the election is over. We have decided we will continue on. We will charge on, but there will be some rebranding and the platform is going to change a little bit. So check out the show notes because we are starting dedicated social media channels and a dedicated Substack for the podcast. The podcast is going to be called Rivera and Reeves because it's the easiest thing. So we can talk about whatever we want. Ta-ta-da. So if all of a sudden your Campaign Games subscribe on your, what is it called? A podcast app suddenly changes from Campaign Games to Rivera and Reeves. Don't worry. You haven't been hijacked. It's still us. We've just rebranded. Oh. All of the Campaign Game episodes will still be on the same feed. If you're already subscribed to us, we're just transferring and rebranding the feed. You will remain subscribed to us. But just in case, the links to the Substack and the socials are going to be in the show notes. So we want you to go ahead, hit subscribe on all of those so we can notify you and keep in communication, especially if you are subscribed to my Substack, because that's where it's been hosted lately, and you want to continue to get those email notifications when there is a new podcast episode, make sure you go over and you subscribe to the Rivera and Reeves podcast Substack. So I think that's it, right? That's like the main thing.
I think it's going to be great because we're not going to just be talking about a campaign. We're going to be talking about politics writ large and just anything that suits our fancy. It's going to be great.
Which is why we chose our last names. It's a little episode of R&R with Rivera and Reeves. I don't know how.
Also rest and relaxation, because what is more relaxing than talking about politics? Come on.
In the news. I know. Right. So peaceful. So relaxing. So go ahead and make sure that you do that. In addition, if you are listening to us for the first time, do all of those things, but also subscribe to this podcast feed and leave us a 5-star rating. And since we're going to be your new favorite podcast, you're going to leave us a lovely comment and note, and you're going to share it with a friend, right? Okay.
Right.
Now, let's talk about the pardon. The pardon that never was to be. Never going to be.
But everybody knew it was to be.
I mean, honestly, first of all, I thought it was really interesting because let's break this all down to give you guys a little bit of background. Unless you've been living under a rock, we all know that the 50 plus year old son of Joe Biden has struggled with addiction for a long time now, right? He is currently
sober. I put in air quotes because there was always like rumors, like even when he visited the White House, I think it was last year for the 4th of July party, that he was clearly intoxicated with something. And that could be a rumor. It could be wrong, but it could also be right. But apparently he's been sober for 5 years. But yes, he's struggled with drugs for quite a long time.
Well, and not just like a casual, low-key, a little bit of a marijuana joint. We're talking about he was a crack addict.
Hardcore. Yeah.
There's really no other way to say about to discuss
as
it,
in
right?
When cocaine was found at the White House, everyone was, oh, obviously it's Hunter's, obviously.
Yeah, those okay. are the two rumors. The rumors is the cocaine that was found at the White House was Hunter Biden's. Of course, we have never been able to find out or never been told who that belonged to.
Surprise. That's never been solved. Right.
And then also there is that video of him on the balcony during the 4th of July, which, you know, he was in a jacket. It was really hot, but he looked really tweaky. Let's be honest. Okay.
Yep. Lots going on there. And Jill did not look pleased. She looked very annoyed.
Yeah.
So,
but she, I mean, Rachel is very much into, what is it, body language.
I'm a big body language person. And I think it helps. Okay. I think it helps to observe that, but you know, whatever, whatever, Mercedes, if you're making fun of me,
I'm not making fun of you. I'm just pointing out that you really appreciate body language.
I do.
Okay. So the background on Hunter Biden is, I mean, we can go way, way back. During the time that Biden was VP, Hunter Biden was on the board of, for example, Burisma, which was a Ukraine energy company. He did work for a Chinese energy company, which is CEFC. He also initially, I believe, did some work with Romania. All of this was, he was being paid millions of dollars for his advice on issues that really he has no expertise in regards
to. So most people just assume, probably rightly, that he was being paid millions of dollars because his last name's Biden. And there was direct access or indirect access, but kind of direct access to his father, the vice president.
And then in the midst of all of that happening, he was doing his drugs. So at one point in 2018, after Beau Biden had passed away and he was dating his brother's widow.
Also not a great look.
Yeah. He was in the throes of his addiction, which, by the way, also Kathleen Biden was in the throes of addiction, which a lot of people view that Hunter got her hooked on crack. But anyways, in the midst of that, he tried to purchase, or he did purchase, a firearm. And in that documentation, where when you're purchasing a firearm, he checked off that he was not a drug addict at the time of the purchase, which was a lie. That Kathleen got upset about the gun, tossed it into a trash can that was across the street from a high school. And the Secret Service basically went looking for it, and the whole thing kind of got covered up, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Also, in the midst of all of this and the throw of his addiction, he's also evading taxes.
Mm-hmm. And also videotaping himself doing lots of...
Well, yes, but he's not being charged for any of that.
No, but it's relevant for later, okay? Because that was all on the laptop.
It was all on the laptop. And actually, a lot of this stuff got revealed because of this laptop that was...
Which was, quote unquote, not on the laptop because it was around an election time, which may or may not have influenced an election. I'm just saying. These are all things that are relevant to the conversation.
Well, the FBI did get a hold of the laptop prior to the election, before the news ever broke, kept it on the down low, protected Hunter. There's IRS whistleblowers who have testified to this.
Yeah. And by default, protected Joe Biden during an election. I'm just saying. This is.
And then when the laptop did come to be revealed by the New York Post, hopefully a lot of our listeners are aware of the censorship and
total suppression of the story.
Yeah. And the 51 intelligence agents that tried to say that this was probably Russian disinformation when the FBI already knew it existed. And it was like they knew it was real and that was a complete
lie. You know
when
that won't happen? You know when stuff like that won't happen? When Kash Patel's in charge of the FBI. Oh, but we'll talk
about
that.
Don't get ahead of us.
Oh, it's excited.
I know. I was like, anyways, okay, let's not get ahead. So that is the general kind of like background story of what, and that's a very general story. If you want more details, like really nitty gritty details about this pardon specifically, I did a section in my Underground Dispatch newsletter that published on Tuesday. So you guys can look at that and I'll share that in the show notes. So that's kind of like the background on Hunter. That's a quick synopsis, very oversimplified. Now, one of the things is that Hunter was eventually charged with the tax evasion, which was slow rolled for a long time, according to IRS whistleblowers, which he should have been charged with even more counts of tax evasion. But the statute of limitations ran before the charges actually became, or the issue actually became public, right? And then he was also being charged on the firearm issue. So there are two separate charges. Then the Biden DOJ tries and do a plea deal. David Weiss, which is a special counsel, plus Hunter's attorneys, they go before this judge. They try and do the plea deal. The plea deal is supposed to be covering these two separate issues. However, within the language of the plea deal of the firearm charge is language that would have essentially given him blanket immunity for anything that he has done, specifically with concerns about FARA violation. So FARA violations is when people are required to register as foreign agents when they're doing business for foreign interests. For example, when Hunter Biden was doing business for the interest of Ukraine. However, the judge was like, well, this is a weird thing that you've thrown in here.
Why would you do that unless what you were doing was kind of illegalish?
Like, yeah, that has, well, just not just unethical, like the structure of
well,
the plea
deal. Well, it's unrelated.
Exactly. Yeah. So the structure of the plea deal was something that the judge was not willing to sign because it also assigned some responsibility to the judge that they were like, I'm not going to take this on. So the plea deal fell apart. Now, the speculation is, allegedly, which I follow this line of thinking, is that there was an attempt for the DOJ and Hunter's attorneys, probably, it looks like, worked together to create this blanket immunity for Hunter to prevent him from ever having to face charges for what he did with Ukraine and China and when he was running around as a bag man for Biden. Because also the allegations are that Biden has benefited from this money that Hunter was collecting all over the world while he was riding Air Force Two, right?
So you're saying that the DOJ might have had a role in this. That feels, I don't know. Deep-state-ish, kind of illegal, kind of unethical, kind of, I don't know, not okay.
I mean, if we're going to take the word of the media and our very honorable Scranton Joe, absolutely not. That never would have happened. The DOJ is a completely independent entity or agency and would never do the bidding of the president and to protect Hunter Biden, even though there's two IRS whistleblowers who have been running around who, when I say IRS whistleblowers, they're also doing criminal investigations, which means that they were like under the umbrella of the DOJ. They're like working in partnership with the DOJ when they're investigating crimes that Hunter Biden had possibly done, which actually eventually after this plea deal fell apart, he eventually went and pled guilty. So he pleads guilty and we are like, I don't know, a week and about a week away. Sunday, we were about a week away from him being sentenced. And guess
which is funny too, because even smart commentators I've been listening to this past week, they're like, the timing of this is really weird. I'm like, is it weird? I don't feel like it's weird at all. I feel I think it's very obvious why he pardoned him right now, why he had his like revelatory moment this over the weekend. They're like, it's bizarre that it was on a Sunday and not at all. He's doing it right before his son is going to be sentenced. Like, this is obvious why he's doing it.
And then he pardons him on Sunday, just literally like a week out from him being sentenced for one of the first cases. I can't remember which one was coming up for sentencing first. And then like a week later, maybe like a week and a half later, he was going to be sentenced for the other one. So because typically when presidents do pardons, they do them like the day before they're leaving office. They just do like a whole bunch of pardons.
And he can do this right now.
Yeah. He does it just right before he's about to go to be sentenced.
I wonder why.
Now, here's the other deal. Okay. Let me explain to you guys, or let us explain why
you do it.
Why this pardon is so insane. Okay. Because pardons can be, historically, they can be very controversial. People don't like them. Presidents will pardon their friends. And let me tell you, every president has had some controversial pardon.
Yeah. And no one likes really any of them. And I feel like it's okay to have the discussion, like, should there be some sort of limits put on presidential pardons? We could talk about, you know, should presidents be allowed to pardon their family members? But there's nothing we can do about it right now. It would take a congressional involvement and vote, a constitutional type of reworking to change it. So it is what it is. And all presidents have done some where people kind of, you know, cock their head and they're like, what? You know, you got Bill Clinton pardoning, I think it was his brother,
half-brother. Yeah.
Yeah, half-brother, excuse me. I mean, we're going back a long time. People.
I mean, one of the most scandalous ones was Nixon. Ford.
Gerald Ford pardoned him. I mean, it was a 4-year period. He gave him that pardon, basically covering anything that happened during Watergate, which, by the way, everything you told about Watergate, go read my post. Mercedes will link it. It'll blow your mind. But every president has had a pardon or two where you're kind of like, really? Wow. All right. We're going to do that, huh? This one takes the cake, though. It really does. And I'm not saying that just because I think that Joe Biden and Hunter are corrupt and involved in lots of illegal things that would probably shock Americans. This one really is.
It is.
It's its special pardon.
I would categorize it as unprecedented. Okay. Even though.
For sure.
There will be some in the media. I will be like, but, you know. Ford
okay, show
did
me another
this,
one then. Show and, me another one. No, Ford did that for the good of the people so we could turn the page and move on. And he only did it for the time period during Watergate. He did it for a specific reason. No, it's
well,
the same.
Trust me, I'll give, even in my posts, like I give the arguments why that's an absolutely ridiculous argument. Okay.
Yes, very good. Yes.
So in regards to why this pardon is like a do what? Como? Why?
I'm sorry.
Malo? So if this was just, because there's this narrative of like the father, the loving father who is protecting his son. This is why that is a BS argument. Okay.
Right.
Because if that was really the case, he could have just communed the sentencing. Do you know what I mean? He could have just set that aside, but still the charges themselves would have remained on his record. So that could have been
one option. Like clemency and just said, we're going to deal with the ones that you've been convicted for. I understand you're going to be sentenced for these. Let's just take care of these two situations. Mm-hmm. Okay. But no.
And also you could still leave them on the record as in like, you'll have to deal with the repercussions of those being on the record and it existed. You did it. Okay. But you still don't go to jail.
That would have been a good parent move. I can see that. I could understand it. I don't know if I would have chose the same thing, but I can understand it.
Okay. So if that was, I think that would have been like the most fair,
you're
right?
Still didn't have to deal with the fallout.
But in this instance, completely pardoned as if it's never happened, right? So it's wiped
and
from his record.
That, please explain what has never happened.
What has also never, ever happened
is an entire decade.
It's 11 years. Okay. So this pardon goes all the way back to conveniently January 1st of 2014. By the way, Hunter joined the board of Burisma April of 2014. Just going to put that out there. Okay.
Yep. That's no coincidence. It's not a mistake. It's on purpose. And that's also covering Joe Biden. Joe Biden is pardoning himself right now because he's kind of, you know, getting rid of the questioning, the potential, what he thinks is lawfare that's coming his way, you know, that's going to kind of be quieted because now they can't do anything to Hunter. So,
well, I don't know if that's exactly going to work out because I'm going to roll that theory there.
Excellent.
But
tell me what's going to happen. So excited. Like a new season.
I know it could possibly extend. I think so. I think that will happen. But first, we have, so that's the blanket immunity. It goes all the way back to 2014, very conveniently when he was running around, what I believe, as a bagman for his father, collecting millions of dollars and throwing them in trust. You know, that 10% H is going to hold 10% for the big guy, which was one of the things that it was an email that was discovered on the Hunter Biden laptop. And in addition, you have to understand, too, that Jim Biden, Joe Biden's brother, has also done similar things. So I wouldn't be surprised if Jim Biden.
I was going to say, I think that there might be more pardons for family members coming.
Yeah, I think so, too, especially because right now the narrative that is being pushed is that Trump, in retaliation for his falsely perceived persecution, this is air quoting here, will then go after Hunter Biden and his family. So now Biden needs to pardon everyone. So that's going to be the claim that is going to be the talking point that is going to be used as to why Biden does these, probably, I'm speculating, in the future pardons, because he's having to protect his family.
He's going to be the talking point that the media is going to use to excuse or to deal with their embarrassment for actually believing him when he said he was not going to pardon his son. And they all talked about how ethical he is and how he really respects the rule of law And he's nothing like Trump because Trump does not respect the rule of law.
The presidential promise to put the law before a family.
I said I abide by the jury decision. I will do that and I will not pardon him.
Letting the world know that he will not wipe away the decision of 12 of his son's peers.
Was asked directly and he has said he wouldn't pardon his son if he gets convicted.
Let's wait and see what happens if he loses.
But he said it.
He's going to get pardoned by his dad. There's no question about that.
The president has ruled out pardoning his son.
Major commitment from the president, accepting the outcome of the trial and also pledging not to pardon his son.
So the challenge for him is really to continue to live up to his values when it was really personal, and he did that today.
It seems like a pretty normal, straightforward answer, but it takes new weight when we see what Trump is saying about the outcome of his trial. We're hearing from other Republicans who say they don't accept the jury's verdict here in New York.
The contrast is profound. To sit there and say, well, I'm not going to intervene in the legal process and I wouldn't pardon my son. One side, Democrats and Joe Biden protecting the justice system. And on the other, Republicans and Trump protecting Trump.
A current president of the United States has so much respect for the law that he has said he would not pardon his son. I mean, what... Yeah. You know, again, it's all about the contrast.
President Biden saying, I will respect whatever this jury decides. That's versus right. Donald Trump after he was convicted on 34 counts, saying the entire system is rigged against him.
Their latest attack has been that Joe Biden has politicized and weaponized the DOJ, right? That was the whole argument around Donald Trump's conviction. And this week, of course, Hunter Biden was found guilty. And Joe Biden has very clearly said he would not pardon his son. He would not commute his sentence. How stark is this difference? I mean, how can Republicans keep making this argument now that Joe Biden has really put it out there?
And then, ooh, whoops, he decided to pardon his son. And now they have to walk it all back. And they have egg on their face. They're so embarrassed. But they're going to use that line. Like, well, but you know what? He's doing it because of this. And they're going to say he had to because they're going to come after him. He had to prevent further lawfare against his son, yada, yada, yada. That'll be the talking point.
Yeah,
for sure.
And then also this, they're going to bring up, you know, that this is not the first time that it's happened. They're going to bring up Ford and Nixon, like I mentioned earlier, and then likely also bring up, because they also love to, you know, they're both Republican.
Yeah.
George H.W. Bush's pardons related to the Iran-Contra affair. Now, this is why these are different. Granted, for example, in the case of Nixon, he was pardoned for any crimes that he committed or may have committed. That was the language within it, which is pretty much what Biden has also done. But you have to understand that in both of these cases, these were people who were public officials. Whether you agree with it or not, this was part of them working as a public official.
Right.
They weren't private citizens who were running around with bags of money in the throes of drug addiction, being pardoned for everything that they did by their daddy.
Yeah. He has been a very bad man. Like, there's no other way to kind of sugarcoat it. There was a decade long, longer than that, but this decade that they're giving him a full pardon for, who knows what he did during that time? We do not know the full scope of his activities. Joe Biden does, which is why he gave him 10-year free pass. And I just think it's, to even compare them is so intellectually dishonest. And every one of those people in the media who would do so, who would try to do so, is just silly. They gave Nixon, and when HW did this, these were for specific situations, specific events that happened. Hunter's pardon is my kid was screwing around on drugs with prostitutes, with, you know, guns that he lied on the forms for. He was involved in tons of foreign relations that he shouldn't have been involved in. And so was I. So just like, how long do we have to kind of dismiss all of this stuff? The two are not the same.
Not just that. The language is so broad. Okay. So, and this isn't just us saying it. There was an article published by USA Today. They were speaking to U.S. pardon attorneys, and it says, this is a quote from Margaret Love, and she was the U.S. pardon attorney from 1990 to 1997. And she says it's very broad. She called it unprecedented, except for Nixon's, which we may not agree there, but let's move on.
Right.
And then she goes on and she says, it does not pardon specific offenses, but rather takes a rather broad time span and pardons anything, any crime that may have been committed during that time span. So if, let's say, I'm speculating here, Hunter Biden, while he was running around with bags of money in the throes of addiction, probably, by the way, one of the reasons that he got into this whole tax evasion situation is because he was writing off strippers as a business expense.
Okay. That's the thing. Like, we don't even know what else he was paying for with this money. We have no idea. He could have been involved in sex trafficking. He could have been involved in underage prostitutes. You have no idea. And everybody's like, well, he was addicted. And I'm like, yeah, he was addicted. He was high as a kite. He was crazy. And he had tons of money. He videotaped the crazy stuff he was doing. And who knows what else he was doing. And we're just going to be like, yeah, it's okay, fine. Go ahead. And when Biden says in the letter, in his statement, you have to understand, I love my son, and it was really, really sad. I'm like, okay, are we giving that same understanding and that same immunity to all of the people that you want to prosecute all the time for stuff like this? Does it count? Is it understandable then? Because it's always all these people in the media, well, it's understandable. He's a father. It's understandable that he'd want to do this. It's understandable. I'm like, what? We don't even know what he did. The stuff we know that he did is very bad. We don't even know the rest of the stuff he paid for. You know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely. And specifically, when you brought that up, like, he could have been doing anything in the midst of that,
right,
you know, period of his time. And this is so broad and so blanket that he could have murdered someone.
Well, and he could have murdered someone on the last weekend because he gave it through December 1st and wasn't it announced on the 30th?
He had like 24 hours.
He could have gone hog wild.
Did you see there was like a bunch of memes of this is Hunter for the next 24 hours and he's going on like a bender? It's absolutely insane. So
that's irresponsible.
The entire breakdown for the most part of how nuts this pardon is. Okay. So anyone who's telling you that this is just the act of a loving father, no.
Well, it's not. And I really want to push back on Margaret Love, not her specifically, but the other people that are going to try to compare this to, say, for instance, Ford pardoning Nixon. They are completely different. Everybody knows they're completely different. Was Nixon granted 4 years of, you know, blanket immunity for crimes he committed or may have committed? Yes. But everybody in the country and people who are now looking back on it, they know that that pardon was so specific to the events of Watergate. It's not like there was this quiet understanding amongst people on the Hill that he was doing backroom deals and he was secretly drunk and paying for strippers with money that he got from whomever. No, it was specific to Watergate. And whether you agree with what happened in Watergate or not, or the prevailing narrative of what happened in Watergate or not, which go read my post. The point is that everybody knew it was just for that one event. This pardon of Hunter was not for just the tax evasion or just the lying on the form.
Yeah.
This was for 10 years of him being drug addled and doing all sorts of deviant, skeevy, scummy behavior. And also, I think a large section of the country knows that the reason he was given this 10-year blanket immunity is because his father was involved. And I want to hear your theory of why that might not, you know, hold up. But I do think that Joe Biden was not just pardoning his son with Hunter's interests in mind. It was also with his own interests in mind.
Yeah, I think that will be also assumes that this is an attempt not just to protect his son, but also an attempt to protect himself.
Right.
Because the FARA investigation, or this investigation into whether or not he was a foreign agent and what was happening with that money, was ongoing. He just hadn't been charged. Right.
Right.
Now, here's the little problem possibly that could pop up. And I'm totally speculating here.
Speculate away.
With this pardon, Hunter no longer is at risk of incriminating himself. So he no longer has a Fifth Amendment right to not testify because he could incriminate himself.
So if they do come for Joe, he has to He can't. He'd have to perjure himself. He wouldn't be able to plead the fifth.
So if there was an investigation to continue to see maybe how other members within the Biden family, including Biden, possibly benefited from what Hunter was doing, Hunter could be subpoenaed to testify against his own family members because he can no longer plead the fifth. Now, granted, they're going to try and dodge it as much as possible, but it's just not the case. Now, the question is, optically, how will that look? You know, all of this claim of Trump is going to go after his enemies. He didn't do it with Hillary Clinton. I don't know if he's going to do it with Biden specifically in the sense of try and lock Biden up. I do think that, especially with considering who he's putting into the DOJ and now also the FBI, Kash Patel, I do think that the stuff will be brought to light.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know if anybody's going to go to jail.
Yeah, I don't know if I think that that's really on the top of his to-do list.
Exactly.
I think he's got so many other things he's worried about. I think that more than anything, Trump probably just loves seeing Biden kind of squirm a little bit. Like, oh, is he going to do something to me? You know, but I don't know if he's really, I don't feel the whole media and every Democrat I've ever met feels like he's out for blood, which is hilarious because he didn't do anything with Hillary, who clearly did things that were against the law. I just don't think that he has an appetite for that. I mean, I could be wrong. And please do prosecute him for the things he did. If it's found that he did illegal, you know, activity, then sure. But I just don't think that that's.
I mean, we talk a lot about the politics of it and the optics of it. And I just don't know how beneficial it is to go after a man that is clearly
an ex-president, and he's old, very old.
Exactly. And he's not doing well. However, I do think that what will likely happen is that the cover-ups will be exposed.
Yes.
The corruption within the DOJ will be exposed. And I think a lot of people, I personally would be as satisfied with that as opposed to like spending all this time to just throw Biden in jail. And then what? I really care about is reforming the DOJ and the FBI and rooting out that corruption that has been ingrained in there for all of this time. And I do think that Hunter could still be brought to testify in order to confirm those things and bring those things to light. And he can't plead the fifth. So either way, I think he's going to be testifying. It's just like what the end goal is going to be. So we'll see how that works out. Now, what I think is really funny here is not only the media's shock about the entire thing. Okay.
Yeah. Which is so delicious. It's like how disattached from reality must you be to think that he was actually not going to pardon his son. But I go on.
What was also interesting is Jake Tapper reported, or was he was, I watched a video of him reporting, I think NBC News actually broke the story, that Biden had been considering pardoning Hunter all the way back in June this year, which was a year after the plea deal fell apart. Very conveniently, it's my DOJ tries to get this plea deal going for my son. It falls apart because the judge is like, this looks weird. And Biden's, I believe in the law. I believe in the justice system. And I will take whatever happens, mm-hmm. happens. And I'm not going to pardon my son. Yet the reports are that he was considering pardoning his son all the way back in June.
Welcome to The Lead. I'm Jake Tapper. And we start today in our politics lead with the stunning reversal from something President Biden and the White House have for months and months and months said he would emphatically not do, pardon his adult son, Hunter, who was convicted of 12 federal crimes, six of them felonies, including tax evasion and unlawful gun possession. Sources told CNN today that President Biden did not go through the office of the pardon attorney at the Justice Department, as is standard. In fact, President Biden has been discussing pardoning his son with top aides since Hunter's conviction in June, according to NBC News' reporting, while at the same time, the president was telling the rest of us this.
Let me ask you, will you accept the jury's outcome, their verdict, no matter what it is?
Yes.
And have you ruled out a pardon for your son?
Yes.
Yeah, and during this time, he's giving interviews saying a blanket, absolutely not. I will not pardon him. No, I believe in the rule of law in our country. I will not pardon him. And he's got his spokespeople, his entire administration, including Karine Jean-Pierre getting up every single day. They hammered her on this question, like, at least two or three times a week. They would say, is he going to pardon his son? Is he going to pardon his son? And every time, she's, it was a no then, it's a no now, it's a no in the future. No, no, no.
Second one, would the president pardon or commute his son if he's convicted?
So I've answered this question before. It was asked of me not too long ago, a couple of weeks ago, and I was very clear, and I said no.
Okay. Let me go back to the first question of the briefing. I know you said not a lot's changed since yesterday and that it's a personal matter, but from a presidential perspective, is there any possibility that the president would end up pardoning his son?
No.
Again, you've also said several times that the president would not pardon or commute the sentence for his son, Hunter. I just want to make sure that that is not going to change over the next 6 months. The president's saying he would not.
It's still a no. It's still a no.
It will always be a no.
It's still a no. It will be a no. It is a no. And I don't have anything else to add. Will he pardon his son? No.
So I get it that everybody says politicians lie. Yes. Okay. I understand that. And is the special job of the press secretary to kind of cleverly, what's the word, shift around realities, you know, to suit their narrative?
That's a nice way to say lie.
Yeah. But there is a difference between the way that the Biden administration lies so blatantly to America's face over and over and over and over again, and the way other administrations have lied. And it's Biden's is absolutely unequivocal and blatant. And other administrations was, we're going to try and be a little bit more clever with our wording. And it definitely wasn't as much. I'm sorry. This administration lies more than any administration I've ever witnessed in my life. And it's all the time.
Well, it's not just that he lies. It's that when he's lying, he's also wrapping it in as, I am just so dignified and I'm so above it.
Yeah, it's a moral superiority lie. It's I am better than you, and I'm better, certainly better than Trump, because I would never try to subvert the law, which he's done his entire administration, obviously. And it's so clear that he's done that on so many levels, tried to go around the rule of law. But this one, it's so bad that even his acolytes are like, wow, they're scrambling to find an out for him, and they can't.
And then on top of that, not only is it that it's an unprecedented blanket pardon, but it's also the way that he did it. So typically you go through the U.S. Pardon Office, discuss it with them, they file it, they announce. No, he just announced it. He completely bypassed the Pardon Office. And then after all of this time of him saying that he's not going to pardon his son, it then turns out that it looks like that as soon as the plea deal started to fall apart, he's like, okay, well, my next step is to pardon my son. He was thinking about this back in June. Also, at the same time, we're constantly getting this narrative of how above Biden is, that he's willing to deal with the repercussions of his son possibly going to jail, unlike Trump, who's been calling the DOJ corrupt and politicized and that it's been weaponized. And then Biden and all his lackeys and all of the media are saying, oh, see, it's not weaponized. It's not partisan. It's not politicized because they're going after Biden's son. Well, yeah, because they already knew that they were going to pardon him.
Yeah. It's not just deceptive. It's corrupt, in my opinion. And I do think there is some kind of credence to the theory that at this point he might just resign. Like, I don't even think he cares about the presidency anymore. He's going to foreign countries and like throwing billions of dollars to humanitarian aid in Africa. He's trying to give every bit of money we have left to Ukraine. Just take it. Here you go. He's pardoning his son. He's just kind of doing whatever the heck he wants now at this point. He's got a month left. I don't care. I'm just going to do anything and everything. And I think that there's no consideration at all for the role of president that he's in.
Yeah.
I don't think the administration cares at this point.
I think he's done.
Yeah.
I think he's over it.
And I'm like, if he didn't so intensely hate Kamala Harris, I can see him totally being like, I resign, make her the first woman president. Or maybe that's why he would do it, because she'd have a month of the glory and then have to give up the role. I don't know.
Well, and what's hilarious about that entire narrative, you know, after all that time of being like, he's not going to be pardoned, the DOJ isn't corrupt, it's not politicized. In his statement that he released, he goes and he says, I just thought this was really funny. And he goes, here's the truth. This is at the very end of his statement.
Oh, here's the truth. I'm going to give it to you now.
Yeah.
Leave me.
All of a sudden. Okay. Here's the truth. I believe in the justice system. But as I have wrestled with this, I also believe raw politics has infected this process and it led to the miscarriage of justice. And once I made this decision this weekend, there was no sense in delaying it further.
Here's the truth.
So now all of a sudden,
I believe in the rule of law, kind of, but not enough. And so I'm just not going to follow it.
Well, okay. I believe in the rule of law. But by the way, yeah, maybe they are kind of like politicized and maybe they are.
And now, maybe he knows that it's politicized, maybe, if he believes that. Maybe he believes that because he politicizes lawfare. That's what they've done. So, you know, takes one to know one.
Have you heard the clip of KJP on Air Force One? This is, so yeah. Mind you, when he dropped this pardon, he jumped on a plane and went to Angola, to Africa, yeah. Because he had promised to visit it before the end of his presidency. So nice that he can keep at least like a promise.
Well, he was going to go in 2023, but he didn't do that. So yeah. He kind of kept a promise, but he is there and he's giving away tons of cash too. So,
but you've heard that clip of one of the press is like pushing on her saying, so Biden has said that the DOJ wasn't corrupt, but now in this letter, he's basically saying that they are politicized. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you justify this? How do you reckon this? Yeah. And she is like, falling over herself trying to make a defense of this.
So, Corrine, when the president says that the justice system is infected with politics, how deep is the rot? And how much of the blame does the president take on himself for the fact that his own Justice Department, his appointees, have allowed it to get this bad?
To your question, and this plays into what I just read with the SDNY deputy chief, which is, look, there was a deal on the table, a carefully negotiated plea deal agreed to by the Department of Justice, unraveled in the courtroom with a number, this is the president's voice, with a number of my political opponents in Congress taking credit for bringing political pressure on the process. Had the plea deal held, it would have been a fair, reasonable resolution of Hunter's cases. This is the president saying
this. Yes, he's saying his own Justice Department is broken, Corrine.
He believes in the Justice Department. He believes that
after
there was...
saying all that? He believes in the Justice Department?
This is his words. He said this. This is the president saying
this. He just said it's infected with politics.
I said I would not interfere with the Justice Department's decision-making. I kept my word, even as I have watched my son being selectively an unfair prosecutor.
So how deep is the rot? How many selective prosecutions are there at the DOJ?
What I can speak to is this particular case, which is Hunter Biden, who has the last name of the president, who I just said there were political opponents who were very clear and very vocal about going after his son.
That poor girl is like, could my job be done, please? I'm horrible at this. Can't do this anymore. I have lied through my teeth for 2 years straight. I only have a month left. I just want to, she needs a nap. She does. We need a nap from KJP, please.
We're going to move on because I want to talk about cash, but I'm going to put this out there, okay? Because the entire narrative in regards to Trump and with the incoming administration is that he's seeking retribution, right? He's going to go after his political opponents. And because he's going to go after his political opponents, people are justifying what Biden is doing. But let's remember, going after political opponents, where did that start? It started with Biden's DOJ, okay? Yeah. Biden's DOJ went after Trump. So now Biden is concerned that Trump is going to target him in return. And so it's important to remember that the precedent of targeting your political opponents came from Biden.
Well, and he doesn't have a reason to be concerned if, one, he and his son didn't commit loads of crimes. Okay. So first of all, if you didn't do anything wrong, you don't have to be super concerned. But second of all, you are concerned because you know how you've weaponized your DOJ. And you're afraid that another DOJ, an incoming DOJ, is not only going to find out that you've done some really shady stuff, but they're gonna come after you. And if you've done the shady stuff, you deserve it. They should come after you. But if you've done nothing and you didn't weaponize a DOJ, why are you so concerned? It's because it started with him. He did that, and now he's going to have to pay the price for stuff he may or may not have, but probably did do. So sorry.
Well, and now think about it. Now he has set the precedent that incoming administrations would possibly go after the outgoing administration. Right. So now in order for presidents to protect themselves and their family and anyone that worked with them, they're just going to have to pardon everybody.
No, they broke the glass on this. I'm sorry. If you don't want to be concerned about being taken to jail or tried to, if you are concerned and you didn't want every president from now until the end of time to have the opposing party try and bring lawfare against you, you shouldn't have done that. This began with you. You did this with Trump. You tried six ways to Sunday to nail this guy. That's been your whole thing over the past 4 years. And now you're afraid? Well, you should have thought about that. Definitely.
Well, he thought he was going to win.
Yeah, and he made it normal. He made this something now that if it happens to the next administration and the next administration, people will go, yeah, been here, done that, seen it. They broke the glass. Sorry.
Yeah. So cry more.
Yeah, really.
Speaking of reform,
let's talk about cash.
Let's talk about cash for a minute. Okay. Just if you guys have been following us for a hot minute, you probably listened to our episode with Blake of the Crappy Christian podcast. And in her episode, because I think it was when we went on her podcast that we speculated and kind of like thought about what our ideal candidates would be. I brought up Senor Kash Patel. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, when I said Kash Patel should be in the Trump cabinet, I said either attorney general or director of FBI.
Yeah.
I got my Christmas present early.
Yeah. I think Kash Patel for FBI is way better than attorney. Very excited about FBI. Yeah. So excited.
I think so, too.
If you don't know who Kash Patel is, tell the people who Kash Patel is.
So Kash Patel, he has a pretty extensive record of experience, either as deputy to the acting director of national intelligence or chief of staff to acting secretary of defense. And actually, he at one point was even working for the Obama administration in the DOJ as a federal prosecutor, I believe. But the main thing that he is really gotten a lot of recognition for was during the whole Russia fiasco in 2016 when Trump was coming into office. And he, along with Devin Nunes, were investigating the Russia hoax. And they were the ones, he was basically second in command with Nunes investigating the Russia hoax. And he was the one that exposed the violations of the FISA subpoenas, the fact that they were surveilling Trump, the fact that the whole thing was a hoax. So there was like a memo that was dropped by Nunes that laid the entire case out. It kind of like blew the whole thing up. Of course, the media and the Democrats were like, this is completely bogus, but we all know liar, liar, pants on fire. He was one of the authors of that memo. He has been openly sharing his opinions on how to reform the FBI, what he would do as FBI director. One of the things being like, I would immediately pull them out of DC. Them being in DC politicizes the FBI. They need to go out and be cops. They need to go out to their respective stations and be cops, which is what the FBI is supposed to be. They're supposed
what it was for a long time. He also has talked about just really pounding the idea of make sure that everything's transparent. He's day one. I want to release this file. I want to give when things are collected. He basically talks about how there is an overuse of classified documents within the federal government, how everything is classified. And so because everything is classified, there is absolutely no transparency for people. There's no release of information for the public. And he wants to streamline that. He's like, everything is classified, everything, every memo, every email, every single thing is classified. So they can't get to the bottom of anything. And there's no information for the American citizen to understand what the heck is going on. He's talked about it on the Sean Ryan show. He's talked about it with Glenn Beck. And I think it's important because he's very much talking about efficiency within the FBI, within the federal government, and transparency, two things that we need way more of from the feds. Like, he's wanting to go in and basically clean house, and it has people very, 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 very,
very afraid.
Well, and did you see, so as soon as it was announced, did you see the video or did you see the clip of Andy McCabe talking about Cash Patel on CNN? Yeah, and how he's uniquely unqualified. I think if he says that he's uniquely unqualified, then hire him, right?
Well, I just thought it was really funny because if you're unfamiliar with who Andrew McCabe is, he served as the deputy director of the FBI from 2016 to 2018, I believe, right? And he was also acting director of the FBI. So, of course, mainstream media loves him because he worked within the FBI. However, he was also one who was embroiled in this entire investigation and surveillance of Trump. He pushed the Russia.
He's a complete partisan.
Absolutely. He's a total partisan. And he was even like dismissed at one point because of lack of candor. And so he ended up losing his.
Andrew, I just want to start first with you and just get your reaction to this news tonight.
Yeah, well, it's a terrible development for the men and women of the FBI and also for the nation that depends on a highly functioning, professional, independent Federal Bureau of Investigation. The fact that Cash Patel is profoundly unqualified for this job is not even like a matter for debate. So I think what we should really be thinking about right now is, what does this signal in terms of Donald Trump's intent for the FBI? The installation, or the nomination, I guess we should say at this point, of Cash Patel as FBI director can only possibly be a plan to disrupt, to dismantle, to distract the FBI, and to possibly use it as a tool for the president's political agenda. And, you know, as an organization, we know what that looks like. This country has been there before, right? The pre-Watergate FBI, the J. Edgar Hoover FBI, struck fear in the hearts of Americans across the spectrum of politicians, people in entertainment, people in the civil rights community, because the director operated at the direction of presidents to collect political intelligence and to utilize the legal authorities, the investigative authorities of the FBI, to terrorize and intimidate Americans. So the question is that where we're going back to with this nomination? I would argue that Cash Patel would be the perfect person for Donald Trump to nominate if that's in fact his intent for the FBI.
Let's just say he's not exactly on the up and up. So it's really funny to hear him criticizing Cash Patel and to suggest that Cash Patel is not experienced or does not have sufficient experience to lead up
the
FBI.
Rich. That's Rich. That's him being afraid. That's him.
Because let's really understand.
He's a little nervous.
What he's really nervous is that how much more it's going to expose the questionable practices that have long been within the FBI. So let's put that out there. Now, there's a lot of debate. I think he's probably, because of course the media is kind of pushing Cash Patel as one of these, what's the word I'm looking for? Like lackeys, loving Trumpsters that will do anything that Trump says. And granted, he has had, talking on Sean Ryan, that sort of thing, he has had some kind of what people would consider out there ideas. You know what I mean?
But like what ones?
Well, that's what I was about to say. Like one of them being that he's going to shut down the FBI headquarters in DC and turn it into a deep state museum. Now, I don't think that's a horrible idea or whatever, but I also think that that's him talking with Sean Ryan and being, you know, if I were to have my dream list and do the most extreme things without having any kind of restrictions, this is what I would
do. Honestly, who amongst us has not said, oh, if I had all the power in the world, these are the things I would do. But like delivering on that is completely different. And also delivering on lots of the things that people say takes an act of Congress. So everybody, cool your jets, like calm down. I really doubt that the first thing he's going to do when he gets into his position is to be like, let's set up a museum. Let me get a board together to
of
draft
all the things,
the museum plans. Like, okay,
guys. To like spend your time on. It's like, okay, yeah. Calm down. So,
yeah.
But I think he's going to get through. I think he'll get confirmed. I hope he does because I really want him to.
He is one of. I'm less concerned about his confirmation hearings. I think they're going to be spicy. I'm really excited, actually, because I think there's going to be a lot of meat on that bone for the confirmation hearings with him. We're going to be hearing a lot of back and forth. And I think he has receipts, which, you know, me and you love. So I think he's going to take it to him in the confirmation hearings. I don't think that there's going to be that much of a problem getting him through. It's some of the other ones that I'm like, there's an uphill battle for a few of those. And I think Cash... I mean, I hope he is.
I know. Can I just say that?
I'd be really curious who would be the second in line, actually. So,
well, and it was funny too because I remember when the notification showed up on my phone. I was sitting on the sofa next to my husband, and I literally like leapt out of the sofa and did this big gasp. And my husband's like, "What? And I'm like, "He nominated Patel," and my husband, both and I, were like. Dancing around, celebrating. We're way too invested, way too into this entire thing.
Yeah. Well, but, this one's a big deal. I think that people are, if they're not caring about these nominations, especially if they voted and they were enthusiastic about Trump, if they're not paying attention to these, and I don't think they even know what's coming. I don't think that they are sufficiently informed about how really... I don't like to use the word revolutionary, but just they're game changers. If they're actually going to deliver on what they say their intentions are for cleaning up government, there's a lot that could be done here in good ways for pay attention.
Yeah. What I think is really cool is that, you know, Trump during his first administration, his first election, he made a lot of promises that he attempted to deliver on a good quantity of them during his first term before, you know, a lot of his policies and things like that were thwarted by DC in general. This time he is much more aware of the practices of DC, and these appointments that he's making, or sorry, these nominations that he is making signal that he was serious when he said, I'm going to reform these departments specifically. Yeah. I'm going to reform the DOJ, the FBI, the intelligence community, and our health, like those, and immigration. And those five, like those, the choices, the nominees for those five departments completely reflect that he plans to keep those promises, which is why I think the establishment, the Democrats, RINOs, all of these people are like really stressed out about it. And they're really upset about it. So I'm not surprised that, you know, they're going to come after him in the way that I'm expecting them to come after him. Yep. You know, hopefully he doesn't have the baggage and the type of drama that Hegseth and Gates have with them. Because I'm really kind of over that type of drama. Okay. Can we like not have that on the headlines? It's annoying me. And the good thing is that as soon as Cash came out, I don't even think he's gone up on the Hill yet to do his mini campaign for FBI director. Like Pam Bondi was just posting pictures, I believe, on Monday and Tuesday. where she was meeting with senators, you know, doing her little campaign for confirmations. But in regards to Cash Patel, we already have Senator Cruz, Senator Grassley, Mike Lee, Marsha Blackburn, I mean, Tuberville, Bill Hagerty, like, pretty recognizable names within the Republican Senate that are already supporting him. Or I think Grassley's probably the one that's been kind of supporting him, but saying that he needs to go through confirmation. But for the most part, all the other names that I've mentioned were on board right away with him, as opposed to with Gates and with Hegseth. You know, they've been a lot more
hesitant
to respond on whether or not they're going to support him. So, and then to give some quick updates specifically about two nominations, Hegseth, first of all, because I've already talked about him, he's been nominated for defense secretary. And if you're interested in knowing more about all of these allegations surrounding Pete Hegseth, Megyn Kelly's done a really good deep dive into it and kind of laid out the legalities of these claims. I would highly recommend that you go and listen to her coverage of that. There, yesterday, last night, when after Rachel went to bed at 5 o'clock in the afternoon,
kind of accurate though, kind of accurate.
The Washington Journal published an article speculating that, because it's looking like Hegseth may not have the votes. I think there's currently maybe 6 Republican senators that are on the fence. And I'm sure 3 of them, which the 3 commonly know, are not going to be voting for him. So I think he can't be down more than 3 or 4. I can't remember the number off the top of my head.
I feel like it's 4, but
yeah. So if there's 6, he's not going to make it. So the Wall Street Journal published an article speculating that according to inside sources that are familiar with the discussions, so they didn't name a source. So take this for the grain of salt that it could be, is that if Hegseth isn't going to make confirmation, that Trump is now considering DeSantis.
Which would just be a wild turn of events, because he no likey Ron for a long time. So
well, I don't know if it's, I mean, they have an interesting relationship. I think it's really odd to pull him as governor of Florida too.
Don't get me wrong. I would be thrilled to have Ron in any position in the cabinet. I think Ron DeSantis is great at governing, which is why Florida would be like, seriously, you're taking him. You took Marco. You know, they're Bondi, like you're taking everyone from us. So I can see Florida really not being super jazzed.
Yeah.
He's been a great governor. So
he has been a great governor. Now, granted, he is coming up because Florida does have a 2-term limit. So yeah, he is in his second term. He will be coming towards the later end of his second term, you know, if he were to join the administration. So there is that. But I don't know what would be the process if DeSantis were to join the administration. So if he steps down, then the lieutenant governor, I guess, mm-hmm, maybe takes over to finish off the term, and then they'll do an election, because I can't imagine they would run a special election for a governor. I'm not sure what the whole process would be, but it would definitely be interesting. And I'm sure that a lot of Floridians will be like, dude, are you going to keep poaching people out of Florida? That's kind of annoying. Yeah. So yeah. We'll see how that pans out. And again, this is the Wall Street Journal reporting late last night. Discussions of people who are in the know, but there's no sources cited. Because Rachel and I were discussing, what is a discussion? Is a discussion like, yeah, I'm seriously considering maybe this guy? Or is it like somebody goes, oh, hey, what do you think of Ron DeSantis? And then Trump goes, no, I don't think that's a good idea. And then that's discussed. Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
We discuss all kinds of things. I mean, when I hear that, a third party said that they heard someone discussing and talking about this. I don't know. I discuss all kinds of things that are never going to come to fruition. You and I talk about scenarios that like are pipe dreams. So I don't know if I give it that much credit, but who knows? Again, I wouldn't be devastated if Ron DeSantis joined the administration. I think, like I said, he's great at governing. He's sharp and he doesn't back down from people, you know, insulting him, attacking him, making false claims about him. He barks back really quickly. He knows what he's talking about.
And just to confirm, it would be the lieutenant governor that would take over.
It would. Right. Look at you. See, I looked for several moments, couldn't find anything. And you're like, found it.
I'm very good at this sort of thing.
You are better than I am.
So, but we just wanted to confirm that. Then finally, a development in regards to nominations is
also happened after I went to bed at 5 p.m. last night.
Was the nomination for the head of the DEA, which was the sheriff of Hillsborough County, Chad Cronister, I believe is how you pronounce his last name. Mm-hmm. Anyways, when he was nominated, there was a big uproar because apparently he arrested a pastor when he held services over during COVID restrictions. Is that what ended up happening?
Yeah, he arrested a local pastor who kept his church open during COVID. That pastor, according to reports, spent $100,000 to upgrade his church's like air and filtration. But he arrested him and then, you know, held a press conference after. And that's not the only thing he did. Like there, I did a post on it a couple days ago. The day before, there were multiple reasons to be concerned about this pick. So I from the jump was like, nope, I don't understand this. I don't feel like this is what Trump voters voted for as a whole. And I heard from a lot of Floridians who were like, yeah, He is not in my favorites. He's not one of my favorites. And I also heard from some Floridians who liked him a lot, but the consensus across the board seemed to be, where did this guy come from? Why him? You know? So,
well, everybody's voice was heard because last night he withdrew his name from the nomination. So
I mean,
now
I don't want to say that I did that, but I'm not going to not say that.
Rachel thinks she has a lot of power. You got a lot of throw.
Hey, I'm just saying.
So now the head of the DEA is again open for another nomination. We will see what happens there. So far, we've had two withdrawals, and we'll see what happens with Pete Hegseth, because I think he is potentially the next one that could possibly get pushed out.
You heard it here first. We may have a DeSantis situation on our hands.
I don't know.
Someone heard someone that said something over the phone, maybe on a text somewhere, somehow.
All right. So that is a wrap for today's episode of Campaign Games. I want to give you guys a reminder that we will be rebranding to Rivera and Reeves. All of the socials for Rivera and Reeves are in the show notes. Make sure that you give us a follow on those. And if you are already subscribed to our podcast, Campaign Games, don't worry. You still will be once we do the rebrand and the switchover. All right. Just in case there is any issues, make sure that you join the email list, which is going to be on Substack, Rivera and Reeves. And that way we can communicate with you, contact you, email you, and also notify you of brand new episodes. And then also, just a heads up, for the holiday schedule, we will be out for 2 weeks. We're going to be out the week before Christmas and the week of Christmas. That's basically when I'm going to be troubleshooting all of this switchover.
And we will still be on our socials, but you won't see us here in the podcast feed. But don't worry, we are getting lots of things ready for the new year, because we're going to sail right through the inauguration day with you and the confirmation hearings and anything else that comes our way.
We're going to keep chugging along.
That's right. So give us 2 weeks off for Chris, then we will be back in your ears very quickly.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
In the meantime, make sure that you hit that follow button so you don't miss another episode. And since we are your new favorite podcast, please leave us a 5-star rating, a review, lovely comments, and share us on your socials. If you tag us, we will share it on ours, because sharing is caring and it really helps the podcast grow. So thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time on Friday for another episode of Campaign Games, the game of survival for both the candidates and the voters. Bye.
Bye.
The best New Year's deals are happening now at Tanger Outlets. Celebrate with up to 70% off savings from Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. From activewear to accessories, beauty, and apparel, find everything you're looking for to kickstart the new year. The clock is ticking. Hurry into Tanger Outlets to save more. Hundreds of brands, unbeatable value. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.